Hello, everyone. This is another edition of the Advocate Podcast. I am Scott Rothschild.
And we are really fortunate today to have the Kansas Education Commissioner, Randy Watson, with us. And Commissioner, welcome. Just wanted to say I heard and saw you give your annual report earlier this week to the Kansas State Board of Education on Kansas public schools and how they are doing. And frankly, there's a lot of encouraging news. Naturally, there are also challenges and concerns. And Commissioner, welcome. And could you kind of summarize what you said in your report and how our Kansas public school students are doing?
Sure, Scott. Thanks for having me on. It's always a pleasure to talk to KSB and appreciate the work that everyone does. So we had the opportunity, as we do every October, to kind of look back over the past year and take a look at what we believe is going well and what adjustments we may need to make at a state, and also encourage local levels based upon data that we're seeing. So we really try to take this opportunity to kind of examine policies and procedures and see, you know, if we need to make course adjustments, if you would, to make sure that we're still on the path to helping each child become successful into young adulthood. And this past year, we have seen overall some really good data. So that would indicate that there's some remarkable things going on in schools, and that, you know, we may want to even intensify some of those efforts to increase that. So let's just start kind of at the end game, which are our kids graduating and are they going on to some kind of post-secondary education? And the answer is yes. Graduation for the last reported data that we have in this last cycle is just under now 90%, highest it's ever been. And what the post-secondary effective rate, while it leveled off some, still remains extremely high, which means students are graduating high school and they're going on to earn something beyond high school. That may be a certificate in welding. It may be an associate degree, a baccalaureate, master's, or PhD. And we think all of those ways are successful. So that data looks pretty solid. I want to mention that what we do know about the post-secondary college, so the four-year rate, it looks like that number dipped a little bit, especially with males in our state. And so we want to make sure that we're watching that we're hitting the market on engineers and teachers and things that require a baccalaureate, a master's, or a PhD, doctors, nurses, because we obviously need those workers in addition to plumbers, right, and electricians. So just a little caveat. And then, Scott, as you know, then we have to look at the skills then that enable kids to do that. And so one of the ways we do that is through our state assessment program, which measures core academic subjects in grades 3 through 8, and then once at high school at grade 10. And we saw in those a reversal of what had been a decline, and in mathematics, a pretty dramatic reversal that takes us back to results we haven't seen since 2017. So in every one of those grades that we assess, we did not see any decrease in performance. So what that means is in our lowest level, Scott, level one, we did not see that number increase, which is not what you want. We saw either it stayed the same or go down. In fact, it went down in the vast majority of the grades we assessed. In mathematics, we saw the same thing. And in levels 3 and 4, where we're aspiring to move kids over time, we saw, again, the vast majority of those grade levels went up in levels 3 and 4. 2 stayed the same, but the rest went up. And in mathematics, every single one went up. So really good news after, as you know, kind of a hit with COVID, where we saw a decline for a couple of years.
So yeah, that is really good news. And just to go back a little bit to the graduation rates, of course, this is important. More kids graduating, more kids getting college credit and industry certificates, because it translates into money, doesn't it?
So there's two ways I think that listeners should focus on why we do this work. We do it at the State Department of Education because it enhances a student's likelihood that they're going to have an opportunity to earn good wages and be prosperous in our state.
Right.
If you're an economist, or you're just a policy, or you're just thinking about Kansas in general, you want that to occur because it drives the economy of Kansas by having a greater skilled workforce. So it's really important that students in 2023 and beyond graduate high school, but they have to graduate with skills. And we tend to measure that in a broad sense by whether they can go on to earn something after high school. And if so, we like to say, well, then they do have some skills or they wouldn't be able to do that. And so we're very happy with that graduation number. We still want to get to 95%. We've increased graduation since we started this work by 3.2 percentage points. But Scott, what's even, I think, greater than that is we've increased the number of kids earning something after high school by right. 7 percentage points, while graduation's gone up 3.2. So even within those graduating classes, more of them are going on than was true 5 years ago.
So they're graduating with more skills that they can use when they look for jobs and things like that.
That's correct. And they're the recipients of that. That will drive them to higher income levels, higher job satisfaction. They tend then not to live in poverty. They tend not to have, you know, social a drain on Kansas. They tend to be better mentally, physically. There's all kinds of indicators that census data and other researchers will tell us happen if you can help kids become successful to graduation and after high school. So overall, we're really pleased by the movement. Now, we have a ton of work to do, and I know you want to talk about that too, Scott. Mm-hmm. We're not at the destination yet, but we're very encouraged by what we see over the last year.
Yeah, it sounds like all the trends, the important trends, are moving up. On the state assessments, I know a big emphasis of yours is to raise kids out of that level one, the lowest level, into the 2, 3, 4 on those state assessments. Can you talk about what public schools are doing to kind of accomplish that?
First, let me just explain. So we score state assessments on levels 1, 2, 3, and 4. We know that students that score in level 1 in high school, in 8th grade and in high school, because we've measured this, we followed kids into adulthood, they tend to graduate at a less rate, and they tend to go on past high school at a really greater rate than students that score at a level 2, 3, or 4. It gets progressively better. So that's why, as you said, we want to move every student that we can out of level 1. When we say that, that means our descriptor is you have limited academic capabilities to go do that work. And that's in mathematics, science, and English language arts. So we really want to move that data. That's important. Now, let me tell you what the state board's doing, and then this work is what schools are doing, and school boards and administrators and teachers are doing every day. State board committed $15 million to train every pre-K through elementary teacher, so grade 5, grade 6, all administrators, all professors that teach reading in colleges, private and public. and anyone else, special ed teachers, anyone else that would work with kids. They, the state board put $15 million to do that training through the fall of 2024. So anyone who hasn't signed up for that, do that. It is hard training. Mm-hmm. It's 2 years, but everyone that you will talk to from veteran teachers say it's the best training we've ever had. So we're committed to that. School districts are doing that. We heard from two teachers at Shawnee Heights about the remarkable transformation in their classroom because of that. So
the science of reading training.
It's called the structured literacy through the science of reading. Extremely important that everyone gets involved in that. And again, no cost. We're providing the cost of that. That doesn't mean that there's not a lot of sweat equity that they have to put into that, sure, but no financial cost to them. But what school districts are doing and that we're seeing is that they're paying attention to those academic skills and then those Kansas CAN competencies that we often talk about, which are so vitally important too, persistence and goal setting and teamwork and those interpersonal and intrapersonal skills that students need to combine with the academics to propel them to successful adulthood. And the evidence is clear that schools are spending time doing that work. And so that's very, very encouraging as we look at this data this year.
Is now, I know you have also talked a lot about one of the main things we need to do when COVID happened, and then we came back into the classroom, a lot of kids were just missing. And this is a nationwide thing. Chronic absenteeism has increased dramatically. It's increased in Kansas. What is your take on that issue, and how important is it to kind of reverse this this trend?
Thanks for bringing that up, Scott. It's very important. And as I said to the state board, and I just want to emphasize it here, you know, what has to happen is that you cannot teach students that are not in school. And so the very first thing we have to have is attend school regularly, ready to learn. We know that one of the factors when we look at, will a student that enters kindergarten graduate from high school and go on to become an electrician or a teacher or a doctor? One of the strongest predictors is how much school did they miss in kindergarten? And so we track something called chronic absenteeism. Right. And that's when a student misses more than 10% of the days of school, non-school related. Like when you get to high school, they were out for an FFA trip. And so just to put it in easy terms for everyone to understand, if a school district was going to school 170 days a year, then a chronic absenteeism student missed more than 17 days of school that year. That would be 10%. Mm-hmm. And before the pandemic, what we saw is that statewide, the chronic absentee rate was around 13%, between 13 and 14%. During the pandemic, that escalated to as high last year as just under 26%. Mm-hmm. So that was over a quarter of our students in our schools were not in school. They weren't coming to school. For a variety of reasons. That number lowered. It dropped about 4% in this past year. Now, again, that's encouraging, but we are not, Scott, at the rate that we were pre-pandemic. And so we want to drive chronic absenteeism to be as low as possible, certainly below 10%, and we're still sitting at 21.8%. It's lower than last year, so we like to see that sign. I like to say, if you go to the doctor and you're supposed to lose 50 pounds, and the doctor says, well, how have you done in the last year? And you say, well, I've lost 15. The doctor's going to be excited about that, but wants you to accelerate it. So we're excited that we lowered the number of students that are missing that many days but we still need to really work to drive that number even lower, a lot lower. We'd like to get it under 10% if possible.
Well, Commissioner, I think you shared some really good news on the state assessments, the graduation rates, our kids getting college credit and industry credentials. And I think this is all great news. I want to switch gears a little bit and talk about the Select Committee on Education wrapped up its work this week. They had 4 days of meetings, and it appeared by comments by some of the members that when the next session starts in January, they're going to try to look at some, maybe amending some of the special education statutes. People familiar with public education in Kansas know we've been talking about underfunding of special ed for several years, which has caused school districts, you know, to have to transfer funds to provide those services. So just what would you and the State Board of Education like to see happen in this area of special education?
Well, first of all, the State Board is unanimous, Scott, and you attend and you watch a lot of State Board meetings, sure. And there's not a lot of votes that are unanimous.
Right.
But they're unanimous in saying that special ed funding should be funded according to the law. I think sometimes what is said is schools or school districts simply want more money. What schools want is to follow the law, which has been on the books now for decades, right, to fund special ed, both at the federal level, Scott, and at the state level.
Sure.
And I can just say that both the federal and state level, it's a federal mandate, and it's also written in state statute that students with disabilities have a right to come to school, and all of their disabilities, they have a right to an individual education plan, IEP, to help mitigate those disabilities, to help educate those children. And they should. No one disagrees with that. But that costs money to do that. And in some cases, it's a lot of money to do that. And all we're asking is for the legislature to fund the law that they have had on the books for, again, decades. We're not asking for more money above that. We're just asking for that. What happens, Scott, is twofold. Mm-hmm. You mentioned those services have to be delivered to special ed students. Right. So you have to take that money out of your general operating fund, which goes to teachers primarily. It goes to salaries. And you have to move that money and demand transfers to the special ed budget so you can fund the special ed needs because it's being underfunded. This in turn takes away from paying teachers good salaries and benefits. And it also, Scott, I think we don't talk about in addition, it puts a strain on the special ed system.
Sure.
because special ed directors are having to go to superintendents, say, you have to transfer us more money. And superintendents are saying, I don't have that money to transfer to you. And then, you know, special ed directors are feeling like, well, what is the, you know, how do we meet the law, but possibly not spend, you know, as much money as we could in that area, but still meet the letter of the law. It's really critical. The state board did everything they could to help the special ed by taking some federal COVID relief dollars, we call that ESSER, mm-hmm, and infusing that over the last few years to prop up special ed funding by a few percent. But Scott, that all is gone next fall. And so that'll even drop the percent of money going even further. And what listeners need to know, there's a few things that you just know in life, that healthcare, right? Everyone knows how expensive healthcare is, good healthcare. Mm-hmm. And if you've gone to the doctor or been in a hospital, you know that. Special ed costs are somewhat the same for severely handicapped kids or fragile students. It costs a lot of money, and that needs to be funded. State board voted 10-0 to provide a 4-year phase in, mm-hmm, to make it statutorily accurate. And that's what we would hope the legislature would do.
Well, finally, Commissioner, we are only, I guess, a couple of months into the school year. How do you feel about where we are, and what major challenges do you see ahead?
Thanks, Scott. And again, thanks for the opportunity to be on with you today. As you know, and I think most people in education know, I love to be out in Kansas schools, actually seeing for myself what's happening and listening to them talk about their challenges. This fall, I went to over 20 school districts already in a week's time, and that was in the far western part of our state. I actually made my way to Goodland, visited some school districts, Waukini and Colby and some others, and got to Goodland, and then traveled all the way down to Elkhart, visiting school districts, and then made my way back toward the eastern part of the state and visited schools. I can just tell you that people are working hard. Students are engaged. We're off to a great year. What I saw, Scott, was some remarkable teaching. I saw some remarkable literacy lessons going on in Rolla, Kansas, in the far southwest part of our state. I saw some remarkable lessons going on in Hugoton. I could go on and on. I talked to just an outstanding kindergarten teacher in Goodland, Kansas. Remarkable things happening. So I am so encouraged. But the challenge that's clear is that we have a teacher shortage. And so we need good people that want to enter this profession and really impact the lives of students. And so if you're out there and you're thinking, you're young, you're thinking about, what do I want to do with a career? Go become a teacher. If you're older and you're thinking, well, the career I chose, it's not as fulfilling as I wanted, you know, shoot me an email or give a call to our office. We'll figure out a way to get you a path into the classroom, because we want you. We want excellent people that want to deliver to kids. That's our challenge. You can see that in every school district, but I'll visit 50 to 60 school districts formally this year, and informally a lot more. And I can just tell you that there's remarkable things going on because of Kansas teachers and how deeply they care for the success of their students.
Well, yeah, I agree with you so much. We appreciate all the hard work that our teachers and school staff do. And you're so right. You know, anytime I visit a school, I mean, it just lifts my spirits totally up. And Commissioner, we appreciate all the positive energy you bring to your job and to our state.
Thanks, Scott.